This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's Thursday, February 21st, 2019. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Kreidel. We have sunny skies right now, but it's breezy and cold right now. The AccuWeather forecast says 31 degrees, but it feels like 21 because of the wind chill factor.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. The markets are down just a smidge as we enter the noon hour. Let's get the latest on trading from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob. We're still positive for the week. The Dow right now lower by 52 points or 0.2%. NASDAQ off 8, S&P lower by 4. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index slightly higher. America's economic outlook could be in jeopardy. The index of leading economic indicators fell 0.1% in January. That's the second month without an increase, and the index projects growth over 3 to 6 months out. Factory orders for durable goods fell shy of projections in December. They were up 1.2%. We saw business equipment orders drop for the fourth month in 5 amid the White House trade war with China. Existing home sales dropped in January. That was the third month in a row for that, a sign the property market might need more than a dip in mortgage rates to rebound. The labor market, though, seems to be hanging on. Jobless claims dropped to 216,000 last week, close to a half-century low. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll be discussing the latest economic trends with Diane Swonk and Target's planning to target parents.
Technology Thursday, the next great American novel could be written by a computer. We'll talk about that at 12:39. And when Zion Williamson's shoe burst yesterday in a high-profile college basketball game, you could bet there were some palpitations at Nike headquarters in Beaverton, Oregon. So we'll talk about the impact there.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Target is setting its sights on parents by focusing on their children. We will cover that in our next segment. Right now, a busy day of data, including the latest report on sales of existing homes. We're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. Diane, how is the economy today?
Well, the economy, the data that keeps coming out is not as good as the markets are now. We sort of have the opposite of what we had in December and early January, and that was the markets were sort of being trashed and going through a lot of volatility, where we saw the economic data coming in actually strong. We were in a data void because of the government shutdown and things have been delayed. Existing home sales are one of the few things we have gotten. After increasing in December, they fell again quite a bit in the month of January with losses in all regions but the Northeast. What's also interesting is that they still have a shortage of inventories of those first-time buyer homes, and they need more construction activity. Now, we have seen some builders more optimistic about the spring housing market than they have been in a while, and lower mortgage rates are certainly a part of that. The real problem, though, is that land use restraints, which have bid up the cost, along with labor shortages and those lumber tariffs adding about 8% to the cost of new construction alone on Canada, those lumber tariffs for soft lumber have all added into the cost of building these new homes for first-time buyers, and it makes it harder for builders to move downstream where they really need to go. So we'll see. The good news is employment's still well. Investment's not been doing terrific either. And so we've got this sort of really, since the Fed last met in January, the data we've seen, the hard data, has been much more bearish than bullish. And they were expecting many of these things to surprise on the upside rather than downside, including those ugly retail sales we saw for December.
Besides manufacturing and housing, what are some other areas that you are worried about?
Well, the issue is clearly issues about trade, and do we get a deal with China? Any deal we do get, I think we will get some kind of a kumbaya with China. That said, So far, the administration has not repealed any of the tariffs it's invoked on any countries, even after we've gotten a tentative trade deal, say, with Mexico and Canada. So I don't expect a major rollback in tariffs. And in fact, you really can't enforce any trade deals with China unless you leave the threat of tariffs out there. And the question is, if they put right into the contract triggers on China, even if we get what looks to be a good sort of memorandum of understanding with China, will they be able to actually enforce it? And if they can't enforce China not stealing our intellectual property and doing things that the rest of the world doesn't want them doing either, that could mean another round of tariffs. We also have that, we're under a 90-day countdown to tariffs on European vehicles and parts, which could dramatically impact a lot of the parts coming in that go into vehicles in the United States. And there's already been some backlash by those transplants in the United States worried about what it's going to cost to do business here going forward.
As an economist, are you looking forward to any potential trade deal? Because it would seem, just given the nature of partisanship in America today, that analysts will kind of junk the science or throw it aside and look at any trade deal with China or some other country or entity through an entirely political lens.
Or rose-colored glasses. I would agree with you on that. I think my view is that it's very hard to get from where we are and where China is and bridge the gap between us, where we both want to be as nations going forward and where China is sort of staking out its presence. I mean, it's getting very aggressive in the South China Sea, where a third of all trade flows through those seas. So any boats that are stopped affects the global supply chain, including stuff coming into the United States. So these are things we worry about more globally, that it's really hard to get from here to there, especially with a bilateral agreement. But the markets seem to want to watch it through rose-colored glasses, that anything we get is sort of good. And it certainly is better, de-escalation is better than escalation for the economy, particularly right now when trade has become such a hot-button issue and actually slowed down investment in the U.S. already. Companies are hesitating in response to that. That said, I am skeptical that we can get to where we need to go with China and deal with the real core issues and the differences between the two countries, which are now gapping.
Well, thank you very much, as always, for the insights. It's always a treat when you join us. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based in Chicago. Coming up, a leading retailer has a plan to grow sales by putting an emphasis on kids.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Target is expanding its presence in children's clothes as it works to bring more moms and dads into its stores. Let's get the details from Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, welcome back to the program. It seems like Target is jumping into a space where a lot of other retailers are suddenly falling down and collapsing. You have Gymboree closing stores. You have Babies R Us gone. Carter's is also doing some retrenchment. So Target sees an opportunity to kind of be this one-stop shop for all things kids.
Well, yeah, for sure they are. And yes, you're right. We're seeing a little retrenchment in the space, mostly from mall-based players who are over-levered, like Gymboree and their Crazy 8 division. But we're also seeing real expansion in places like Walmart, places like Target. Amazon in particular has launched kids' brands. So there's plenty of competition in the space. Children's Place is still a really big player as well, even though they've retrenched on the stores. They're one of the dominant players, and Carter's is the guy that sets the price. So it's a very tough business. It's been a tough business for years. It's always been highly competitive. And it's actually, even with the exits we're seeing from the space, is not getting easier, mostly because of Amazon and Walmart and Target playing such a tough game there. So do I think they're doing the right thing? Yes. I mean, they need to have young families, and they've always been a young families business, just like Kohl's has, and they have to continue to drive that, and that's what they're doing here. They're saying, we can give you everything for your family, and families spend more. And the children's business has been growing about 4% a year, so it's a pretty good business in the space.
Well, speaking as someone, as the parent of a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, who is definitely in the demographic that... that they are trying to reach. It is competitive, and I've always wondered, there's also this shadow economy in children's goods where people either rely on hand-me-downs in terms of children's clothes, or they give them to you because their kids are older. Is that something that actually weighs in the minds of retailers that target children, this gray market of hand-me-downs and people just passing clothes to their friends and family?
That's always been a problem, but it's about to get dramatically worse. And it's about to get dramatically worse because companies like The RealReal and Poshmark and Vestiaire Collective and all of these people who are now making a business out of previously owned clothing are also expanding into kids. ThredUp is another one. I didn't name them. But in any event, those kinds of businesses are becoming real businesses. It's a $25 billion a year business now, which means it's as big as a Macy's or a TJ Maxx, and it's just going to get bigger fast because people have figured out now it's easy to sell the kids' clothes rather than just give them away or give them to charity. They can actually increase the velocity of their kids' closets by bringing in new stuff and getting rid of the old stuff online.
It always amazes me when I walk into Target because there's something there for everyone. They've got the groceries and you sit down and eat and a carpet or a lamp and clothing the entire family.
Well, Target's always been good at what they do. In 2006, they used to say they were the best retailer in the country. I think that they're not quite as good versus the competition as they were. Well, what's changed is Amazon or Walmart. Amazon doing a lot more in the space, and Walmart's a much better retailer than they were a few years ago. So it's just gotten more difficult. It's not that Amazon, that Target's gotten worse. It's that Target has more competition now for that young, strong family. And Kohl's is really, really good with the young family. And they, too, have 1,100 stores across the country. So it's just a crowded space. And online has made it so much easier to compare price, get what you want, check for things that are meaningful to you. It's just more difficult to do business in retailing in general, and it's especially difficult if you happen to be in a space where Amazon lives, and Amazon really lives in apparel and accessories now much more than they ever did.
Something that we're watching this year. Thanks for joining us. Jan Rogers Niffen is CEO at J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide in New York. Still ahead, Technology Thursday, a case where tech may be so good it's dangerous.
WBBM News Time, 1225. WBBM Business is sponsored by Walter E. Smith Furniture. And from Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, the U.S. has never pumped more oil. New figures from the Energy Department show production skyrocketing last week to a record 12 million barrels a day. Saudi Arabia and its allies are trying to limit production. They want to, of course, lift the price of oil. Crude futures right now lower by 0.5% to $56.85 a barrel. Chevron and Exxon are in the red today. They're playing a role in the Dow's loss. The blue chips are lower by 67 points or 0.25%. NASDAQ down 10, S&P lower by 6. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is up slightly. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Today's an up day in the grains. We've been back and forth now for a month. Corn's been up as much as 7.5. At the moment, July up 5 at 392.5. December up 3.5. Beans have been up as much as 14. At the moment, July's up 6.75 at 936.5. And wheat's been up as much as 11. We have March wheat up 8.75 at 489.5. Higher across the board in the grains. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 1230. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are lower today. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Technology Thursday. Creators of a new artificial intelligence writing system are worried that it could be misused.
The injury-inducing breakdown of the shoe of a top college basketball player poses a problem for the company that makes it.
Chicago's police superintendent Eddie Johnson says that Jesse Smollett owes the city an apology after the Empire actor is charged with a felony for filing a false police report.
WBBM Business, markets are down slightly during the noon hour. The Dow is down 80 points. The NASDAQ is down 13. The S&P 500 down 7.
The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
And markets are in the red. Just a touch. We're joined now by Brian Battle, Director of Trading for Performance Trust Capital Partners in Chicago. Brian, what's the Wall Street story of the week so far?
Well, Rob, let's all take a pause here for a second. The first, so far this year, year-to-date, we're up almost 11%. So that seems like a great rally. But remember, it's on the back of the disaster in November and December. So we're all feeling better that crisis has been averted. So lately, now that we've, you know, gotten all those losses back, we're kind of drifting. There's really, you know, we're down 82 points in the Dow today, down 5 in the S&P. And the two things were most important for us to get our feet back underneath us. First is the Federal Reserve said that they're going to stop raising interest rates. So that gave everyone a lot of relief. And the minutes from the Fed meeting from earlier in the fall was released. And the Fed, in their meeting, the private notes are released after a period of time, says, yeah, we're going to wait for proof of growth until we start raising rates again. And maybe the next move will be and ease. So we're all clear on the Federal Reserve, no increase in rates. So really what we're sort of waiting for is this sort of Damocles sort of hanging over our head, the China-USA trade negotiations that are supposed to be finished by the end of February, or else big tariffs are coming in March. It seems like we're going to get another extension, and I say that because this deadline was caused by a deadline that we had in December. So the negotiations don't seem to be going awesome. We might get a delay. And so we're just sort of drifting because the two biggest economies in the world, if they're going to have a trade war, that's going to affect stock prices. We're waiting for that to get cleared up.
And do you think the financial markets are just going to basically tread water until they get an answer one way or the other?
I sure do. You know, the economic statistics have been underwhelming here in the first quarter, so it looks like the Federal Reserve did the right thing by not raising rates. But there's some static in those economic signals because of all the tribulations and all the stock market. You remember in December, it was wild. Everybody that has stock portfolios saw it go down and kept going. It was a disaster. So that might have inhibited some of growth and consumption in December. So we might get that back in the next quarter, but we're definitely waiting to see what's going to happen in China. The Chinese delegation is in D.C. this week. They're trying to get that figured out.
Is there some concern that we're seeing fewer IPOs, initial public offering?
Yeah, Chris, there has been a dearth of IPOs in the U.S. recently. So IPOs, initial public offering, a lot of the IPOs were sort of postponed because of the stock market trials and tribulations in December, and also because we had a government shutdown. So the SEC was closed, the IRS was closed, and if you're going to go public and file for an initial public offering, you need a blessing from the SEC, and the companies might like to get a letter from the IRS about what their tax position is going to be once the IPO was successful. So the government shutdown has put a big backlog in the IPO pipeline and has also put a lag in it, because if you file for an IPO, there's a 60 or, you know, 30, 60, 90 days where nothing happens while the paperwork gets done. So there have not been a lot of IPOs, and the two biggest ones we're thinking of these days is Uber, Lyft. There's Pinterest is also another IPO that's sort of on the shelf here until stuff gets straightened out.
And do you think that the markets are going to pick up so much that could be a problem?
Yeah, I think so. Uber and Lyft are probably going to come to market first because they announced in the fall that they're going to come to market, and they're interesting companies. Uber is way bigger than Lyft. But Uber generates about $4 billion a year, or $4 billion a month in rides, and they lose $100 million a month doing it. So it's not a money-making business, but it's growing like crazy. Lyft is right behind them. They're a lot smaller. It's about 60-30 is about the market share between Uber and Lyft. They'd love to go public. They want to go public because it's way easier to get new capital and to grow your business if you're a public company rather than raising the money privately. So they're sort of frustrated that they can't get to market because of the market movements in December and just the administrative shutdown. So I think the market will embrace those companies when they come to market, because it's sort of the new economy. How good is it? How successful will a business be? Like a gig, you know, the gig economy, you know, can they make a business of it? It's a great business because Uber has no infrastructure. They have computer programs that hire people to drive, and they don't pay for cars. They don't pay for garages. They don't, you know, that's all been outsourced to the drivers. And so it would be real interesting for them to come public and see who's going to win once they get to market.
Are there numbers for the pace of IPOs over the course of time? I mean, were there a lot of initial public offerings over the past decade during that period of sustained economic growth compared to, let's say, 1999 when a 10-year-old running a lemonade stand knew what an IPO was?
That's right, Rob. The last great burst of IPOs was during the dot-com boom. And what's happened recently, and when you say recently, over the past decade, over the past 5 years, is there's so much money in the market. There's so much private equity money in the market, people looking to invest, to buy businesses, that a lot of companies are going private. So the IPO trend has been down because it's easier to run a private company once you have it, once it's established, because you don't have to please all your shareholders. You don't have to have public statements. You don't have to release your financials. So for people running a business, it's easier to be private than public. For a growing business, it's easier to be public than private because it's easier to raise money. We'll see if that trend persists. It seems like it will. Because there's so much money looking to be invested, returns are so low that there's a lot of private equity money looking to buy companies, take them private, and then generate profit as they can as a private company.
Thanks for joining us today. Brian Battle is Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Up next, Technology Thursday, a writing program powered by artificial intelligence that may be too good.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and researchers behind a new artificial intelligence system say it's so good at composing text that they're not releasing it. Let's learn more from Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, based in New York. You can find him on Twitter at Shelley Palmer and at ShelleyPalmer.com. Shelley, welcome back to the program. What is it? It almost sounds like a conspiracy theory that this AI program is too good. It can't be released to the public. So what does this program do so well? What makes it that good of a writer that it must be kept under wraps at all costs?
Well, I think this might be somewhat of a PR stunt, but one way or the other, it is not disbelievable or unbelievable that an AI training set, a cognitive agent, could be taught to write prose in a pretty convincing way. Certainly, reports like financial reports that you see on Bloomberg have been written by a computer for years. There are companies like Narrative Sciences that make a ton of money taking financial documents and spreadsheets and turning them into prose that is suitable for the web or a newspaper. What makes this AI system more interesting is that it's writing in styles. So it's writing in the style of George R.R. Martin, or it's writing in the style of a fantasy writer or fiction writer or a report writer. And in practice, not only is it possible, it's probable, and they're not releasing it is really silly, because at the end of the day, you can't contain technology. If they could create a training set that would train a cognitive agent, an AI system, to write, so can I, so can you, because all the AI tools that you need to do that are open source and available to everyone. So the fact that the open AI people aren't doing it, that to me just feels like stunting. But what's cool is that it exists. That's the cool part.
I have an image of the researchers sitting around reading the bot-written book and then saying, these characters are too thin, back to the drawing board. I mean, is that how this this process is unfolding?
So the way that I'm there's different kinds of machine learning. If you were to do this with a neural network or a deep learning system, those systems learn the way that a newborn child would learn. So think about a child holding a rattle. And it bangs the rattle on the floor, it bangs the rattle on its head, it tries to eat the rattle, then it throws the rattle across the room. And your human brain, that child's human brain, is learning all the things a rattle is. It's hard, it makes noise, I can't eat it. That's exactly the way that a neural network learns. And so you give it rules of writing, or you show it good writing. You can show it, you know, hundreds of examples of George R.R. Martin, Game of Thrones sort of scripts. and let it go to town, and it'll do it.
Well,
so
yeah, go ahead.
That's how it works. No, I mean, so that's how it works. I mean, you literally train it, and it learns. And the idea that computers will never write as creatively as humans is kind of silly to even say out loud. Most humans are not Shakespeare. The vast number of composers are not Mozart. The vast number of writers are not Shakespeare, right? We have one in a generation amazing writers, and everybody else just writes okay. Computers are going to write at that level without question, without question.
Wow, we're going to be following this one. Thanks, Shelley. Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group in New York. And you can follow him on Twitter at Shelley Palmer and at ShelleyPalmer.com. Now, join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, a high-profile shoe blowout presents a problem for Nike.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A shoe malfunction sent the top college basketball player Zion Williamson of Duke to the floor and to the locker room with an injury during a highly viewed game against North Carolina last night. Let's discuss this with Mike Ozanian, executive director at Forbes Media and co-host of Forbes Sports Money on FS1's Yes Network in New York. Mike, thanks for joining us today. Potentially, what kind of fallout are we going to see against Nike?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. Well, as we sit here right now, the Dow is down very little percentage-wise. Nike's down much more. So Wall Street is expecting a fallout. And interestingly, Adidas, which is number two in the basketball shoe market in terms of brands worn by NBA players, is hardly down at all. I am less concerned long-term because Nike is so strong, positioned so strongly in this market that unless you start to see players that are currently wearing the shoe, like Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and move away from it, I think Nike's going to rebound well. They have 63% of the NBA shoe market right now. Next highest is 18% with Adidas.
How is this? I mean, obviously, Zion Williamson still being a college basketball player. He's widely expected to turn pro next year. When do they start lining up their shoe endorsements and things like that as before they enter the NBA draft? Is he still Kenny Field offers? Is he committed to Nike? I mean, could this cost them an endorsement in the future?
In principle, you're not supposed to be negotiating any professional deals until after you graduate. What people are expecting is for him to get a deal in excess of $5 million a year. He is, in my opinion, the most marketable player to be eligible for the NBA draft since LeBron James. You know, he's got all the right things. He's a phenomenal player, no trouble off the court, great personality, all that stuff. So I think $5 million may actually be the low end of what he's going to get. And certainly he's going to have great bargaining power between Nike, Adidas, and Puma, and Under Armour as well.
And lastly, given just the amount of attention with the player and the number of people who are watching the game last night, this has to be the most high-profile failure of sports equipment in modern memory.
There's never been anything like this. You know, tickets for this, because it was such a high-profile rivalry, such a high-profile game, tickets at this game were going for Super Bowl ticket prices. You had former President Barack Obama there, other celebrities there. I mean, it happened at the worst popular time, and the TV network suffered because the blowout and the sprained knee was so early in the game. You know, the game ended up being a blowout, and a lot of people tuned out.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. Mike Ozanian is executive editor of Forbes Media, co-host of Forbes Sports Money on FS's One's Yes Network, New York. And if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we will have the replay podcast available shortly at newsradio.com and the radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, WBBM Business, sponsored by the CME Group. And from Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, not much change here. We are still in the red. The Dow is down 82 points, or a third of a percent, at 25,873. NASDAQ falling 15 points. S&P down 7. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is lower as well. Actually, is slightly higher on the day. We've got Lyft and Uber racing to get their stocks into investors' hands. Bloomberg News reports Lyft might be filing for an IPO as soon as next week. Lyft plans to value itself at $20 to $25 billion. Wall Street has long feared that car rental companies are losing customers to Lyft and Uber, but Avis Budget is reporting a sixth quarter of revenue growth and record profits. The stock is jumping 16%. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.